From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Some numbers to remember. An estimated 4.5 million kids smoke 30 billion cigarettes each year.
One out of three of those kids will go on to die of a smoking-related illness.
The number of people who die every day from smoking-related illnesses is the same as if three full jumbo jets crashed and there were no survivors.
Today is the Great American Smokeout. While thousands of people try to kick the habit, the tobacco giants tell the government to butt out. We'll tell the unfiltered truth about the tobacco industry's targeting of teens and have a debate on the constitutionality of putting limits on cigarette advertising. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. UN and Canadian officials say U.S. satellite photos show 100,000 refugees moving north from Bukavu toward Goma, where camps emptied over the weekend after the defeat of Hutu militias by Tutsi rebels. A second mass return of Hutu refugees who fled Rwanda in 1994 as a Tutsi army invaded would almost certainly end plans for a big international aid effort in Zaire. Near Goma, meanwhile, a U.S. reconnaissance plane was fired upon. And House Speaker Newt Gingrich was nominated to return as House Speaker, telling Republicans they must make divided government work and avoid the confrontational tactics of the previous Congress. Meanwhile, Congressmember Gonzalez defeated an effort by the Democratic leadership to remove him as Banking Committee Minority Leader. Secretary of State Christopher says the U.S. is moving closer to allowing limited sales of peaceful nuclear technology to China. Christopher's meetings with Chinese leaders generally have been positive, he said, in contrast with his 1994 Beijing visit. Clinton and China's Zhang are to meet in the Philippines this weekend. And Commerce Department records show a second former official had contacts with Democratic fundraisers and Indonesia's Lippo Group while she worked at the department. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party returned another $254,000 in questionable contributions, more than half raised by John Huang. Authorities are reportedly have known about the dangers airbags can pose to kids for decades. Today's Washington Post quotes industry and government documents in its story. One of the documents is a 1969 General Motors research paper that says the bag's deployment would kill or severely injure a small child under certain conditions. ValueJet apparently wasn't the only airline that had been shipping potentially dangerous oxygen generators. The New York Times says Delta and TWA were also improperly shipping the canisters until recently. Investigators say Delta stopped after a generator discharged and caused a loading dock fire in December, perhaps because of sabotage. TWA stopped shipping them after the ValueJet crash. And Washington is bringing Hollywood celebrities and sports stars together to encourage young girls to stay off sex, drugs, and liquor. It's all part of a new government campaign to steer girls ages 9 to 14 away from danger and into school, sports, and the arts. Health and Human Services Secretary Donna Shalala will announce the campaign today when she addresses the American Public Health Association. In prepared remarks, she says the campaign is needed to counter media messages that tell young girls that unnatural thinness is sexy or healthy. Quentin Young, a fierce advocate of single payer, is a doctor who has just been elected the head of the American Public Health Association. And this news out of Boston, race has been the motivation in fewer than half the urban riots in the United States over the last 2 years, according to a study yesterday. Six of 21 riots in 1994 and 95 resulted from fans being disappointed because a rock concert was canceled or sold out, or because their sporting team lost an important game. This is a study released by Northeastern University. And you're listening to Democracy Now! Today is the Great American Smokeout, the annual day sponsored by the American Cancer Society to encourage people to kick the habit. In the past year, much of the anti-smoking efforts have aimed at children because every day in the country, 3,000 young people under the age of 18 start smoking. That adds up to 1 million new smokers each year, helping the tobacco industry replace smokers who quit or die of cigarette-related illnesses. Today on Democracy Now!, we'll talk about how the tobacco giants target youth. We'll hear excerpts of a new video called Smoke Alarm, and we'll have a debate between advertising PR people on the ethics of marketing tobacco to kids. But first, we bring you this excerpt of a hearing held by Democrats in Congress this fall, where 12-year-old Justin Hoover of West Des Moines, Iowa, told representatives how he started smoking at the age of 6, how easy it's been to get cigarettes, and how hard it's been for him to quit.
Hello, my name is Justin Hoover, and I'm 12 years old. I am in 6th grade, and, well, I want to tell you how I became addicted to cigarettes. I tried my first cigarette when I was 6 years old. My mom smoked and always kept the carton of cigarettes in the living room. I would see her go into her drawer and take a pack of cigarettes out every now and then. I had an older brother that was 15 and smoked. I saw my mom smoking all the time. I wanted to be older than I was and thought smoking was cool and would show everyone that I was a little kid. One day I stole a pack of cigarettes from my mom's drawer, went outside and smoked 4 or 5. And then my sister came out and she saw me smoking. She went inside, told my mom, and my mom told me that I was never to smoke again or I would be in big trouble. She said that even though she smoked, it wasn't a good thing to do. I didn't smoke again until I was 9. I started again because I thought it was cool, because I thought it was the cool thing to do. I saw people smoking on TV shows, when we went out to eat, driving down the street, on billboards, and in stores, I would always see tobacco advertisements, especially Joe Cool for Camel cigarettes, and I really thought it looked kind of cool. I started sneaking cigarettes from my mom again. I did that for a while until I needed more than just one or two a day. I started to steal cigarettes and sometimes chewing tobacco from stores. Sometimes I would sneak out of the house and steal them from convenience stores late at night because the clerk was in the back room, making it a lot easier to get away with. I tried to stop 3 times, but never made it longer than 5 days before I started again. I would smoke buds that I found in the ashtrays at the store across the street. Sometimes I would pick up a bunch and use the butts, take several of them, and pour the unused tobacco on a piece of paper and try to roll my own. Sometimes I would drop the cigarettes in the house, burning the carpet and the furniture. One night I fell asleep and dropped a cigarette on my bed. It burned a big hole in my bed. The next morning my mom saw it and got really mad. I am now smoking 7 cigarettes a day, 1 in the morning and 6 after school, and before bedtime. Officer Hayes and my mom have tried to help me stop. I have come close but can't completely stop. When I was told that I was going to come to Washington, D.C., I was nervous to tell people what I've done. But I know that smoking is bad for me and can affect my health. I don't want my little brother or sister to start smoking. My brother, who is 3, acts like his crayons are cigarettes because he sees all of us smoking. If things don't change, I'm sure he will follow in my footsteps. That would make me feel bad. I believe the only way I will be able to stop smoking is if I can't get them. If stores make them harder to steal and there are no more vending machines that sell them, that would help me. As for my brother and sister, if I don't smoke, they don't see cigarettes on TV or billboards, I think they will have a better chance of not using them and becoming addicted to cigarettes like me. My brother collected Marlboro Miles. You got so many per pack of cigarettes, and after you collect so many, you get to send the miles in for I don't know, he bought a big old bag and took him like a year and a half to to get it, so that's a long time. And he smoked about a pack a day. So just think how many cigarettes that is.
And that was Justin Hoover from Des Moines, Iowa. He was testifying in the fall before Congress. You're listening to Democracy Now!
Some numbers to remember. An estimated 4.5 million kids smoke 30 billion cigarettes each year.
One out of three of those kids will go on to die of a smoking-related illness.
The number of people who die every day from smoking-related illnesses is the same as if three full jumbo jets crashed and there were no survivors.
Remember, if you haven't started smoking by the age of 19, chances are very good that you're not going to start.
Excerpts of a video that's going to air tonight on HBO. It's called Smoke Alarm, The Unfiltered Truth About Cigarettes. It exposes how the tobacco industry targets children. We're joined now by Joyce Newman. She's director of Consumer Reports Television, and she is working with HBO to develop these kind of programs and help produce this program tonight. Why don't we begin by you telling us what this program is all about?
Well, the program is different because it takes the tack that advertising, promotion, and marketing of tobacco products is manipulating kids. And instead of just talking about health facts and how smoking is bad for you, which kids already know, we're trying to appeal to their desire as preteens and teenagers to be really independent thinkers. And,
which is why they're smoking, presumably,
to
be
yeah.
independent of it, right?
But to do what we're trying to do is show them that the tobacco companies are pulling their strings. In fact, they're being misled by some pretty deceptive advertising that's making smoking look cool and glamorous and generally a good thing for you, when in fact it's not.
Let's play a little excerpt. These are the corporate executives from what you call American Pride Tobacco Company, scheming.
October 1994. At the American Pride Tobacco Company, a secret strategy session is in progress. In the room are J.P. Cameron, president, and Janine Wiley, vice president of new products. Their agenda, to develop a new cigarette for the youth market.
The American Pride Tobacco Company needs a new cigarette. And we need one fast if we're going to compete with Philip Morris or R.J. Reynolds. This industry's got 5,000 customers every day quitting or dying off.
Don't say the D word, J.P. Never say the D word. You've got 5,000 people every day who stop using the product.
Right.
And statistics show.
I hate statistics.
I know. They're so darn depressing, aren't they? Especially in this business. But what they show is, if you haven't started smoking by 19, you're probably not going to smoke.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the way I see it, we've got to get 5,000 kids hooked every day just to keep our profits up.
Let me put it another way.
Okay, give me a spin.
First off, don't say kids, say pre-smokers. And don't say hooked, say introduced to the pleasures of smoking.
You're right. Okay. We are not getting kids hooked. We are introducing pre-smokers to the pleasures of smoking.
And I've got the perfect new brand those little jerks are going to want to buy.
What do you got?
I've got Frank Mules.
Frank Mules?
You bet. And what does Frank Mules smoke? Mule cigarettes. It's cool, it's gross, it's totally dumbed out. Just like our target customers.
It's brilliant. Mule cigarettes.
You're gonna love our slogan.
What is it?
It's grab one. Kids all over the country are gonna go crazy. I can see Frank Mule t-shirts.
Frank Mule calendars.
Grab one.
And great big Frank Mule billboards right outside of school.
And look at this. Frank at the beach, checking out all the girls. Frank shooting pool.
This is gonna be big.
Big. It's humongous. It's the first cigarette made just for morons.
Is this based on fact? I mean, obviously, the mule is Joe Camel, right?
Right. The Joe Camel campaign, I think, started in 88 or 89. And the truth is that kids overwhelmingly prefer and buy the three most heavily advertised brands, which are Marlboro, Camel, and Newport. And these companies have very appealing advertising campaigns. They also appeal to adults. But kids are particularly, they're sponges, you know. They're taking in the cultural clues that the advertising gives them, and they're very vulnerable to the advertising, and they think they're immortal.
How much evidence do you have that the tobacco companies, I mean, not that it matters, because not that intent matters, because ultimately it's what they've done, but that they knew exactly what they're doing and that with Camel they know that they're getting kids? And what are the facts and figures on how many kids are getting addicted and, as a result, how many of them when they grow up die?
Well, I think the figure is about 3,000 kids a day start smoking. Of those, 1,000 will end up shortening their lives prematurely, either from cancer or emphysema or heart disease.
At the end of your show, it says what? The equivalent of 3 jumbo jet crashes
right.
a day of people die.
And no survivors. I mean, annually, I think it's around 430,000 deaths are attributed to smoking-related causes in the United States alone, and it's much worse worldwide. But that's just a U.S. figure. And the 3,000 kids a day is just a U.S. figure. So the problem is that the tobacco industry, I mean, if 1 out of 3 go on to die, they need to sort of get more customers. And one of the things that clip shows as we carry out the satire on American Pride Tobacco Company is they're trying to bring in what they call, quote, pre-smokers. And, you know, the new product manager says to the chief executive, JP, you know, don't use the D word, JP. You know, they don't die. We just lose customers. So
I thought one kid in your program put it best.
If it was a 5-year-old smoking, they wouldn't care as long as they made money.
Well, it's shocking. I think our consciousness has been raised by the FDA that nicotine is an addictive drug, just as addictive as heroin and cocaine. And the FDA is calling this a pediatric disease, I mean, of epidemic proportions, which is why they're proposing the rules to limit the tobacco industry from being able to advertise in places where kids would be, you know, seeing it on billboards near schools and convenience stores, in kids' magazines where there's a big youth readership. I think it's 15% or more. The FDA is trying to say you can't run colorful ads.
We're talking to Joyce Newman, director of Consumer Reports Television. She's worked with HBO to present this program tonight, which is going to air at 7 Eastern Standard Time, Smoke Alarm, the unfiltered truth about cigarettes. We're going to come back to her and also talk about smokeless tobacco and play some more excerpts of this program when we come back. But I also want to let you know that call us on our comment line and let us know what you think about smoking. Maybe you're a smoker who doesn't want to quit or finds it very difficult to. Maybe you're an anti-smoking activist and you want to share some strategies with us. Our number is 202-588-0999, extension 313. That's 202-588-0999, extension 313. And we'll be playing some of your comments tomorrow. Also, if you want to get a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. And I also want to remind you that we're continuing to look for slogans for the program, Democracy Now! We can no longer call ourselves the Daily Election Show, or we can, but we'll be very early for the next elections. So what do you think? We've got the exception to the rulers. We had someone call in and say, because we do a number of programs on police brutality, we should say where the grassroots meet the jackboots. What do you think? Call us on our comment line at 202-588-0999, extension 313. That's 202-588-0999, extension 313. When we come back again, we're going to talk about this program on smoking and then a debate on the constitutionality of limiting cigarette advertising to teens. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in 60 seconds. Thank you. Coming up, a debate over tobacco marketing to children. But right now, we continue our discussion with Joyce Newman, director of Consumer Reports Television. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Tonight, HBO will be premiering a new video called Smoke Alarm, The Unfiltered Truth About Cigarettes. And Joyce Newman was involved with putting that program together. Let's talk about advertising for a minute. What about the issues of free speech and limits on advertising?
Well, there are limits on free speech in our, under our Constitution that are justifiable. And addicting kids, giving them an addiction to a drug for the rest of their life and their loss of freedom has to be judged. I mean, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater. That's a limit on free speech. There are rules, and this really targets. This rule is very carefully crafted, and I think parents desperately need help from the government on this, because as parents alone, we can't compete with a tobacco industry. First of all, it's really hard to talk to a preteen or a teenager and tell them what to do in your own family, because they just don't want to listen to you. So you need some social controls, and we are up against advertising of the magnitude of, I think we figured it, $700,000 every hour by the tobacco industry to get people to buy their products. I mean, that's how big. That's about $6 billion annually in the United States.
$700,000
an hour
they're spending.
Yeah.
And
so
the result
is
1,000 people who got addicted as kids.
Yes. Right.
Are dying a day.
Right.
So do you think it's fair to call the tobacco industry terrorist? If you follow the analogy of the three jumbo jet planes going crashing every day?
They don't think they're terrorists. Their argument is it's illegal in all states for anybody under the age of 18 to buy cigarettes. The problem is that it may be illegal, but it's still accessible to kids. So what the FDA wants to do is make it less accessible, less easy, both in terms of how kids perceive the products and whether they can buy them. The FDA wants to ban vending machines. A number of companies have started programs. For example, drugstore chains have, carding programs where kids have to show ID. The FDA wants people to have to show ID in order to buy cigarettes. I think it's if you're 27 or under, you have to between 27 and 18, you have to show ID. So these are things that the government can do to help parents and communities. And we all have an interest in preventing the huge health care costs that result from illness from tobacco.
FDA Commissioner Kessler has made this his number one issue. And certainly risk the ire of the Republicans. Bob Dole said it would be his number one act was to fire him. But is he staying on? And if he doesn't, do you expect to see this kind of campaign continue?
I hope he's staying on. I think this is a long overdue regulation. Dr. Kessler is really unique because I think he has a law degree and a medical degree. And he really knows the regulatory system well and has been able to make tremendous progress on this front. There have been a lot of community groups, anti-smoking groups, ever since I've been covering consumer issues for the last 20 years. It's not that we didn't know they were bad for you. It's how do you regulate it in our society, and given the economic forces and the power of the tobacco lobby in Congress. And he has done an incredible job. So I don't know if he's staying. I sure hope he does.
What about smokeless tobacco, Joyce Newman?
Well, in some places in the country, people are totally unaware of what smokeless tobacco is. But it's kind of a regional phenomenon, but it's a growing phenomenon among very young kids. In our show, one of the kids says he was 8 when he started smoking. Mostly boys smoke.
Smokeless
tobacco, sorry. And mostly boys do it. Right now, something like 20% of high school boys use smokeless chewing tobacco. It's more common in some rural areas. and farming communities. What's happening is that the kids just, you know, think baseball players do it, and they think it's cool and fun, but it has a very serious health consequences. You get these, I think half of teenage smokeless tobacco users have these sort of precancerous white patches in their mouth. Oh. And one of the kids in the show says, you know, it doesn't hurt me very much. I've only lost a few layers of skin inside my mouth. And he's just sort of accepting of this. And with continued use, these lesions become cancerous within just a few years. And in the show, Rick Bender is a grown-up guy who has had surgery, and half of his jaw is removed, and nerves in his arm are affected. And he has a 10-year-old boy.
First, he just had a little sore in his mouth. He ignored it. He thought it was just nothing.
It grew very quickly to about the size of a dime on the side of my tongue. And, man, you talk about hurt now. This thing hurt.
And next year, he went to the doctors, and and then he started to have cancer.
Cut through the jaw, took out a third of the tongue. Had to go down in the neck, remove lymph glands and muscle tissue, and partial cancer down to there. They destroyed nerves, and those nerves control muscles in the back of my right shoulder and right arm. And do you know I really can't even go out in the backyard of my own house and play catch with my 10-year-old son?
After he had cancer, I was kind of scared of him, and so was everybody else in my class.
You can't sit there and say, nobody ever told me. Because you know what you're getting yourself into.
I mean, this is unbelievable. A million boys use smokeless tobacco, and they often start between the ages of 10 and 12.
Right.
So what's being done about this?
The best-selling smokeless tobacco product is made by U.S. Tobacco. It's called Copenhagen, and it's heavily advertised.
Where is it advertised? I don't see it on TV.
Well, both. Another one, Skoll, is another one, and they're promoted on national TV through sponsorship of professional rodeo, hunting, formula car racing, monster truck racing, drag racing, all those programs that people are watching. The signs for these products are plastered all over the tracks. And rings, if it's a rodeo. And one of the things the FDA rule will do is it will permit the parent corporation to say U.S. Tobacco can have a sign, but they will not be allowed to take brand name tobacco products and put them up in the background, in effect, advertising their products on TV. So that's how they're marketed. In the Surgeon General's report in 1994, the Surgeon General said these ads appeared to target male adolescents. And sometimes their ads were done by well-known professional athletes and celebrities, and they were very appealing to kids. The U.S. tobacco line starts with this product called Skoll Bandits, and it's sort of like they have a starter product that's mint flavored so that you can get used to it, and wrapped in little pouches so that the stuff doesn't float around when you put it in your mouth, and then you can graduate to a stronger, different flavored product. And this is sort of evidence that there's a graduation process going on for younger users to older users.
Let's talk about products, not actually the tobacco products themselves, but the products that are used, the premiums that kids can save up for. I think it's demonstrated very well in Smoke Alarm, the HBO program that's airing tonight.
I got my Timber Mountain pullover. That was like 170 packs. I got this great Marlboro carving set. See? I got my Mountain Lantern and Swiss Army knife. This is like 125 packs. I mean, look at this. And this, can you believe it? It is all free. No way I could buy all this stuff, you know, because, like, I spend so much on cigs. Oh, man! Where are the matches? I can't be out of matches. As soon as I smoke 37 more packs, I'm going to get me a Marlboro lighter.
Joyce Newman, how does this work? I mean, we see it both from the perspective of the kids, and we also see it from the perspective in Smoke Alarm of the corporate executives and why they do it.
1 year later, Mule cigarettes are making millions for the American Pride Tobacco Company.
Frank Mule's really taken off in the kid market, right? I mean the pre-smoker market.
You know he has. The more ads we put out, the more cigarettes they buy.
Want to grab one?
No, thanks. I don't smoke. Now listen to this, because I've got a great new idea. I call it the Mule Man Big Butt Bonus.
The what?
On every pack of Mules, there's a sticker, see? And if you save up enough stickers and send them in, you can get great merchandise.
Like what?
Oh, you know, all the junk kids go for. Backpacks, CD players, T-shirts, jackets, bikes.
And by the time they've saved enough Mule Man Big Butt Bonus stickers to get a CD player, those kids will have smoked enough mules to be hooked for life.
And picture this, JP, when they're wearing the shirts and jackets they earned. The little jerks will be walking ads
for mules!
I got a sweatshirt, a T-shirt, a lighter, a hat.
Joyce Newman, what's going on here?
We've found that one out of four kids owns a premium type product. And what they've done is they've bought a pack of cigarettes, they get a little coupon, and all these forms say you have to be 21, but you can just fill them out and send them in. And, you know, they have that phrase on them that protects the company legally. And so kids send them in, and what are in these catalogs are things that are very appealing to young people. And that's what you heard in the clip, you know, sleeping bags, you know, you can send away for all sorts of camping gear. And in the show, we try and make this look like the kid's a fool for having it all.
And every one of them has the logo of, for example, Marlboro.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, kids can spend a tremendous amount of money on cigarettes. I mean, this is just a practical fact. If you buy a few packs a week over the course of a year, you've spent $5,000. I mean, it's a lot of money for kids. So, and this kid is talking about all, you know, he doesn't have any money to buy anything else because he spends all his money on cigs.
As we wrap up, what about the difference in the approach you're taking now to reaching kids? I mean, it's a very much an MTV-style approach. It's fast. It's got cartoon figures. It's got the kids. It's got, skits. But everything is moving quickly. But also the message is different. It's not that you're too young to smoke, which is what the cigarette companies have been putting out to actually attract kids, because they know that's the first thing that'll get them smoking.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the great things about the show is it's very highly produced. It uses the techniques of sophisticated advertising on the side of truth and do no harm. And it really, it's special because the parody and the animation, there's a great segment on called Cigarette Breakout, which is done in stop motion animation. And we took cigarette packs, and we have the voices of Tone Locke, who's a rapper, and Tony Danza, and Lou Diamond Phillips. And they're the voices of these different brands of cigarettes. And they stage a breakout in a convenience store, because one of the cigarettes says, you know, I never wanted to be a killer. They made me a killer.
Wake up, Bic. I'm busting out, Bic. I can't go on living like this. I never wanted to be a killer, man. I got turned into one, you understand, don't you?
Sure, sure, but busting out of this place? It's no cinch, I'll tell you that. How are you gonna pull it off?
You just watch, Bic. I'm getting out, and I'm getting out for good.
What's going on? Premium.
I'm busting out, man.
You lily-livered little low-tar. Get back in your display and wait till you're sold.
That's just it, Marlboro. I'm not gonna be sold.
Chill out, Premio. What do you think they make us for, anyway?
If you don't get sold, you don't get smoked, baby.
They're using us, don't you see? Using us to get kids hooked on nicotine for life.
I'm not looking to hurt anybody.
Kids just go for us.
I'm a smooth character, man.
Oh, yeah? That's what tobacco companies want kids to think.
Look at the ads in this place. Huh? How about that? Whoa. I see kids coming in every day and buying you guys, and it's making me sick. That's why I'm busting out. Who's with me?
I'm with you, Premium. Me too.
Maybe you got a point, Premium.
Take me home, Premium. Take me back to the dear, sweet tobacco fields of my youth. Going far away where I won't be used, where the life I lead is the life I choose.
Let me hear ya.
Oh, take me home with you.
Are you with me, Marlboro?
I'm with you, Premium. Now let's head on out.
Is there going to be an ad campaign that, say, says to kids, you're being had, as opposed to you're doing something immoral or you shouldn't be doing this until you're older? I mean, that's the thing, it seems, that would get kids the most. And so many of the kids, I think you point out that 70% of kids when interviewed, this is not when they're adults, but of high school age kids, say they wish they hadn't started smoking.
Yeah, we're working very closely with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, which is a group in Washington, both a clearinghouse for information and an action-oriented group. And with HBO and this and the campaign, there will be events going on around the country that promote the show. In Washington, there was an event in a middle school where kids signed a pledge and, did posters and sketches and stuff. And we're showing the program and talking to kids about the fact that the tobacco companies are pulling their strings, and something, and the campaign is a great resource nationally for people to get advice if they want to get involved.
That continues beyond mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm. If people do want to get involved, what number can they call?
First of all, if you're working in a group, a PTA group, a community organization, a school, library, any sort of organization, you can order the video and use it in your group with the free companion discussion guide. And you can order that from Ambrose Video. And they have an 800 number, 800-526-4663.
Again, that number?
800-526-4663. If you want to contact the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, they're a terrific resource. Their 800 number is 800-284-KIDS, K-I-D-S,
that's KIDS. That's
1-800-284-KIDS. And those are two ways you can take some action. We also have an interactive tie-in to the show on the web. We've worked with Time Warner, and the URL address, if you want in-depth information on kids and smoking, you can visit the Smoke Alarm web pages. It's www.parenttime.com.
That's P-A-R-E-N-T-T-I-M-E. Double T in there.
Uh-huh.
That's parenttime.com. Joyce Newman, head of Consumer Reports TV, I want to thank you very much for joining us on this day, which is the Great American Smokeout. So, folks, butt out. I'm Amy Goodman. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Thank you.
You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The debate over tobacco marketing to children really took off with Joe Camel, the oh-so-cool cartoon mascot for Camel cigarettes that 91% of six-year-olds can recognize. Much of the criticism of Joe Camel was aimed at the big tobacco companies. But what about the advertising industry, the messenger? Last September, Daryl Travis of the Chicago Council of American Association of Advertising Agencies wrote an op-ed piece in the Washington Post saying that his industry would be ashamed of itself for pushing cigarettes to kids. He joins us now from Chicago for a debate with Thomas Loria, assistant to the president of the Tobacco Institute, the trade association of cigarette and tobacco products manufacturers. And we welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning, Amy.
Well, why don't we begin with the rules that were passed by the Clinton administration in the last few months around advertising to young people. And I'm not sure if everyone realizes exactly what they are, but they are the minimum age of 18, of course, to buy tobacco products. We all know that. But when it goes to reducing the appeal of tobacco products to young people, the rules include banning billboards within 1,000 feet of schools and playgrounds, that other billboards, outdoor and indoor store advertising limited to black and white text only, advertising in publications with significant youth readership limited to black and white text only, and ban brand name sponsorship of sporting or other events, only corporate name sponsorship permitted, and ban brand names on hats, T-shirts, gym bags, etc. Well, first, why don't we start with Thomas Loria? What do you think of the limits that are being put on advertising to young people?
I believe that they pose such significant First Amendment problems that the litigation we have entered in with the advertising industry and the retail industry and the tobacco farmers is going to be an important benchmark case in the protection of commercial speech. It is clear that there isn't any linkage between whether someone has a logo on a hat or a pair of binoculars and the initiation of smoking by young people. There's a major disconnect there that I think most reasonable people can see is more from advocacy and political expediency. In other words, this is what I'm doing to protect kids, than it is a practical realization.
Daryl Travis, your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think that to consider that there's a major disconnect is really disjointed, because I can't imagine that the tobacco industry would spend $6 billion on something that would create a disconnect, and that the advertising and promotion has no effect on kids.
Explain how it does have an effect.
Oh, advertising, by its very nature, is aspirational, and it's persuasive. That's what we do. We're professional persuaders. We use all manners of techniques of understanding psychology. The current rave in our business is account planning, so that we can understand the correct messaging content to speak to audiences of all kinds, so that they will embrace and engage the messages. And those techniques are obviously at play in the marketing of tobacco, and in particular to kids.
But what you just said is way too general. For example, the FDA proposes significant restrictions on billboards. Now, everyone I know in the advertising agency industry is quite clear that the worst possible way to communicate to a young audience is through billboards. It is about as low a form of medium as you can get if you want to reach kids. It is almost irrelevant to a youth audience, and you see very few billboards with youth-oriented products. What advertising critics don't do is objectively evaluate, for example, the 16 European and Asian nations that have banned tobacco advertising since 1970, none of which have produced a subsequent decrease in youth smoking. When you cite a $6 billion figure, most of that, more than $5 billion of that, are invisible marketing costs, coupon reimbursement, slotting allowances. Most of that is invisible to a teen or to an adult. The actual advertising among six major companies amounts to less than $700 million, according to the government.
Daryl Travis, let me ask Thomas Loria to follow up on what you're saying. What do you think would cut youth smoking, and do you think that there is an epidemic of youth smoking?
Well, there certainly is an epidemic to youth smoking, and I think that so much time has passed on this issue, and so much Water is under the bridge in terms of the debate, if you will. We've got to resort to more drastic measures, and that's why I'm in support of the FDA measures. Anything that would work as a deterrent, anything that would work to inhibit smoking. I mean, it's as if we want to turn our heads and say that this is not a problem, this is not an issue, and so we'll just continue on with business as usual.
Well, I don't think there's anyone in the United States that is walking around with that kind of attitude that teen smoking isn't a problem. I mean,
well, so Tom, tell me some of the proactive things that the tobacco industry is doing to reduce teen smoking.
I think the most significant thing we're doing at the moment, Mr. Travis, is the WeCard program that we are underwriting with 13 major retail organizations to make sure that every store checks ID, that clerks know what the penalties are for breaking the law by selling to a teen. We even provide those stores with calendars that has every single day of the year the large date, which is the minimum age that the ID must correspond with. We have training videotapes. We have, since 1990, lobbied in 13 states that had minimum ages below 18 or no minimum age at all to establish one. And we try to point out that this most significant factor why kids experiment with tobacco and many other things is the peer pressure and social influences they face in their own lives.
Thomas Loria, do you
much of which, Tom, is generated by advertising and promotional activity?
Oh, no, that's not true. No one's ever seen
it. Oh, it absolutely is true.
No one's
it's undeniable.
Seen a billboard
for marijuana. Anyone with an ounce of common sense knows that advertising has an effect on public opinion. Otherwise, we should all stop doing what we do for a living.
There's way, way too much clutter to make a blanket statement like that. All advertising does not affect public opinion. If you're not interested in the product, you overlook the ad every single time. If you're not in the market to buy a Buick, Buick advertising is irrelevant, and no amount of hits is going to get you to buy a Buick if you're
consider
not predisposed towards wanting one.
Consider the dynamics of this product, if you will, for a minute. This is a product that your body, when it is initially is exposed to it, actually goes into revulsion. You want to retch, you want to vomit, until you are subjected to the addictive qualities of it and your body can overcome it. Obviously, some kind of promotion, powerful peer pressure induced by public opinion, induced by advertising, induced by promotion, induced by promotional items, has an effect on that.
That makes no sense whatsoever. No one has seen.
Of course it does.
Marijuana smoking is up in the same. Tobacco smoking, regrettably, is up almost 30%. The same kids, same corresponding data from the same government agency shows marijuana smoking is up at the same time 141%. Now, if you can point to the marijuana billboards that are getting kids to hypnotically experiment with that stuff, I think you might make your point. The principal
we can point to a reduction in drug use from the efforts of Drug Free America, which was solely an advertising campaign. And since the media has not been as strong behind that effort, then drug use is up again. So there are many precedents.
I've seen so many T-shirts parroting that this is your brain on drugs. I question whether or not the advertising industry can make the claims that they do. You seem to have a lot of faith in political rhetoric coming from the anti-smoking lobby and very little faith in your industry's own data.
Let me ask you something, Thomas Loria. Do you share the concerns of the anti-smoking lobby? Are you concerned about the number of people who die of cigarette-related diseases a year? How do you deal with that at the Tobacco Institute?
I think that how you deal with it is that as adults make choices whether or not to buy a sports car or to drink or to date or to smoke cigarettes or smoke cigars, I'm not in a position to evaluate what lifestyle choices are appropriate for everybody else. And in a normal, classical liberal society, none of your listeners should be either.
But how about the added factor here that isn't like a sports car or the other products you've mentioned, and that's the added element of addiction?
I think that there is the granddaddy of all warning labels on this product. I have never met a person that wasn't aware of it. I am aware that in 1989, the official government definition of addiction was dramatically altered so that it would include cigarettes. And up to that point, it, like the Europeans, the definition of addiction, which must include intoxication, must include an inability to be able to think clearly about whether you want to continue using the substance or not, was eliminated from American lexicon so that cigarettes could be called addicting in the pharmacological sense, that it's all been kind of a political construct from the beginning. And that's just the way we do things in America. But I think that at the end of the day, people can make up their own minds whether or not smoking should be a custom they want to participate in. I trust them to make whatever decision is right for them.
But what about
one powerful distinction, Amy, that this is the only legal product that, when used as directed, results in death.
Where are the directions? I love when I get that, hear that cliche. There aren't people are going to enjoy tobacco around the world.
Do you want them to buy them and not smoke them, Tom? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that
are they collecting them? Are they setting the packages on their mantles at home and admiring them?
Well, I think
what is the effect of
tobacco? It's a universally legal product, Daryl. I don't think that you're dealing with this in a very real world view. I think that you've got this pie in the sky that you're going to save the world and change all these people from their moralistic habits. And I think that if your side prevails, many advertising agencies are going right down the tube, because the same arguments can be made about alcohol, the same arguments can be made about condoms. Many other adult products can be eliminated by an advocacy group with the exact same arguments you're trying to foist on tobacco. And I think you're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
In the meantime, while we're worrying about that slippery slope, 400,000 people a year are dying. Something must be done.
100% of human beings die. You're going to have to accept that fact. The idea that you can take rhetoric and try to shape advertising policy, which is against your own interests, which is against
Tom,
a free
it is
crowd.
Not against my interests.
Tom Lauria,
not against my interests.
Let me interrupt for a second. When you said 100% of people die, yes, but if you were killed by a car tomorrow, if you were killed in a car accident, that's not the same as living out a full life. What is your response to that fact that 400,000 people die a year of tobacco?
It's very different in the regard that someone did not try to persuade me to drive that car recklessly. To the contrary, someone tried to persuade me, the manufacturer tried to persuade us to drive those cars sensibly and responsibly. There's a huge difference here.
I would say the built-in warning label accommodates that point of view.
Which the tobacco industry applied voluntarily, right?
The Congress asserted it by law. You will never find an ad without it.
The tobacco industry really creates most of these problems themselves by denial and trying to diffuse the issues.
I don't know if there's anyone in the industry that questions the fact that studies have shown that cigarette smoking has been linked in an important way to emphysema, heart disease, and lung cancer.
And how long did it take? And from how many quarters and from how many representative sources did it take before the tobacco industry admitted it?
Well, I think that that's a question that I certainly can't answer. I've been on board since October of 1989, and I've never said anything other than what I've exactly stated. I think that the reason we're on this program, by the way, is because you're making claims about advertising getting non-smoking kids to start smoking that can't be substantiated. And if everyone cares so much about children, why doesn't anyone talk about the peer pressure that is inducing kids to smoke and what can be done about that? I challenge you to come up with an advertising campaign that puts information into the hands of parents on how they can talk to their kids about smoking, drinking, sex, and drugs in a way that will help them say no to their friends and help them have enough self-esteem to push off experimental requests by others in their own age group to try things they shouldn't be messing with.
Okay, let's let Daryl Travis respond. Daryl Travis, president of Arian Lowe & Travis, a Chicago-based ad agency that's working on anti-smoking campaigns for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You know, we've created campaign after campaign like that for the Centers for Disease Control, and we've established many grassroots efforts. And I think we've had some positive effect on it, but the resources are just not there. I mean, we're fighting a $6 billion marketing.
Oh, he's going to cling to that number if it kills him, isn't he?
What's the number then, Tom? What's the number?
The number's about $780 million for all companies combined. If you're going to talk about advertising, at least play the right cards.
Would you say it's accurate to say, Thomas Lauria, that it's about $700,000 an hour that are put into advertising for cigarettes? That's what Smoke Alarm, this show that's going to go up on HBO tonight.
I would say that is radically inaccurate. That is if you take every possible marketing dollar spent by these companies, and you cannot apply that to visible ads that you see.
Well, let me go to Daryl Travis. This piece that you wrote in the Washington Post, "Advertising Our Dishonor, and My Industry Should Be Ashamed of Itself for Pushing Cigarettes on Kids," What kind of effect has it had, and what kind of dialogue is going on in the advertising industry right now around cigarettes?
Well, I think for the first time there is some dialogue. Heretofore, there really hadn't been much considered, and I think the agencies end up, for the most part, operating as brokers on behalf of their clients, and particularly where this issue is concerned, the work is limited to a smaller group of large agencies, and they have a lot at stake, and I think it's probably very difficult for them to look at this issue objectively and look at it from the standpoint of right and wrong.
I think they look at...
But there are many other smaller agencies that are addressing it and standing up and being counted and saying, hey, you know, this is a problem, and we're not going to participate in it, and we are somewhat ashamed that our industry...
You have to be asked to participate in it. A lot of agencies that have no chance in the world of getting a Fortune 500 so-called tobacco account, it's very easy for them to get on their hind legs and say, oh, we're so noble, we don't take those things. Well, but they don't take them because they weren't asked to take them. But the irony is...
Tom, that's ludicrous. That's
it is
ludicrous.
Not ludicrous. Very clearly that is what I'm saying is fundamentally true.
An awful lot of us think that lives are more important than jobs.
Well, an awful lot of us think
obviously
that
precedent, you do not.
Precedent is a valuable bedrock that anyone who communicates wants to preserve. And you seem hell-bent on trying to pull the rug out under your own feet.
Thomas Luria, let me just interrupt a second. Why are you so angry?
I'm angry because there was a 1994 Federal Trade Commission investigation of the Joe Camel campaign. I'm angry because they looked at tens of thousands of documents over 3 years after a formal complaint was issued by anti-smokers. They concluded by majority vote that the Camel campaign was not intended. This is official. This is the Clinton administration officially saying that campaign was not intended to appeal to kids and did not appeal to kids. And it was if that formal federal investigation never happened. We get the same claims, we get the same claptrap from people who actually know better.
Daryl Travis, we're going to give you the last word as we wrap up here. Daryl.
Tom, you sound really defensive. Maybe you deserve to be.
No, maybe I think I need foils that are playing with facts and not with rhetoric. It's very, very hard to thwart rhetoric because it gets into the public mainstream. A simple example, they started off this show saying more kids know Joe Camel than Mickey Mouse. That is fundamentally impossible. How can a couple-year-old ad campaign possibly go after decades of a cultural icon of Mickey Mouse?
Well,
and yet,
because
with a straight face, you say you believe it.
It's had inordinate advertising dollars spent against it in that same amount of time. It's not a number that's difficult to believe at all, Tom. Obviously, you don't understand the dynamics of advertising.
On that note, we're going to have to wrap up. I want to thank Thomas Luria, principal spokesperson for the tobacco industry, who joined the Tobacco Institute in 1989, and Daryl Travis, who is with a Chicago-based ad agency, Arian Lowe and Travis, that's working on anti-smoking campaigns. And I guess I'll have the last word. A study in the Journal of the American Medical Association showed that 30% of three-year-olds and 91% of six-year-olds identify Joe Camel as a symbol for smoking. Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin, our engineer, Errol Maitland, our director, Brother Shine. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. Tomorrow we go down to San Antonio, Texas, to talk about the Alliance meeting this weekend, a political party. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!